democracynow.org. Information for all these screenings and for more as we travel the country can also be found at stealthisstory.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Berkley, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Ramin Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Nicole Salazar, Sara Nasser, Trina Ndura, Sam Alcock, Kimria Studio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masu, Diego Ramos, our executive director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley and to Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman in Toronto with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago.
The promise of America is freedom, equality. But right now, those pillars of our democracy are fragile. Reproductive rights, voting rights, the right to make your own choices and have your voice heard. We must act now to restore and protect these freedoms for us and for the future. We are the American Civil Liberties Union, and we are fighting in every state, every day to defend your rights and the rights of all people.
We have got to be here. We've got to be strong to protect those rights.
For over 100 years, the ACLU has fought for everyone to have a voice and equal justice. And we will never stop. Because we, the people, means all of us. To learn more about defending our democracy, go to myaclu.org today.
And today is Tuesday, the 5th of May. Happy Cinco de Mayo. It's WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. It being 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. A very good evening. on this delightful spring evening here in Stony Brook and surroundings. This is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, how's it going?
Oh, you asked a loaded question. How is it going? Well, Kyle, if you must know how it's going, I'm in no mood. I'm in no mood to deal with any of the crap that's going on in the world. I'm tired of it. I really am. Every week I come in here and I basically harangue listeners about, you know, the dire shape of the world. And it's not getting any better. Listeners aren't helping. No offense. You can't, really. I'm not helping. Nobody's helping. Certainly the people who can help aren't helping. So, you know, what do we do? Do we just come in here week after week and just, you know, complain and then go back and do it again the next week? Feels a little pointless, you know? And we could be talking about the Knicks, who are ahead 1-0 in the best of, you know, it doesn't happen often, okay? It's like seeing a comet in the sky, all right? This could be the year. And people are happy at Madison Square Garden. Should we ignore that, you know? Or should we grasp at the one chance we have of finding happiness this year? I don't know. By the way, I have to get through this espresso that you made, which is amazing. But it doesn't pair well with the cough drop, which I just had. Did you know that? It's a weird after effect. And right now I have it on top of all the negative stories that I brought with me, so I have to finish this before I can read a single one of them.
Okay, well, that's relatable. I mean, wow.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought the microphone was off.
It's a lot of slurping.
It's so good.
Definitely drink coffee or get a nice mug of something that enhances your listening experience, and we'll talk about all those stories. It definitely will fuel us. We're glad we're inside and that we have these things and that we're escaping
the pollen.
How do you get
so much flavor in a little tiny cup of espresso? I mean, I'm only halfway through it.
Elbow grease.
I don't say that. Okay. So, moving right along. This is the weekly show where we take a look at what's going on in the world. And when's the last time we liked what we saw when we did that? When we took that look? I can't remember.
Well, it's, I think the relative comparison. Like, what are you comparing it to?
And well, do you remember that show?
I don't know. I think a lot of people are disassociating.
In 2008, that was before I knew you, actually, where we went into the city and recorded the festivities in the street after Barack Obama won election. And that was a good day. That was a good show. That was fun. You know, we had a couple of nice times since then, but boy, it's been a downward spiral recently. I mean, by recently, I mean the last decade. It really, Lord. Okay, you know what?
Well, it's become something unrecognizable. Hmm. I would say that there's continuity of some of the calamity. Continuity of calamity? The calamitous times hadn't ended then. That was a success. That was something that a lot of people campaigned for. And it was a hopeful time that things would turn around because of other, you know, let's say less than ideal conditions. The operating conditions have not improved. But again, it's how you're gauging it, like relative to what. Yes, individual lives, individual people's stories may have varying kind of proximity to the sort of larger disruptions that have occurred, but you could clock it in decades, like in the last 20 years, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it depends on what you're kind of talking about entirely. So I hear you, but we had other reasons to look to those wins as a moment of joy, because the other things had been upsetting us. A lot of things were difficult post 9/11, not just like for people that were at war, you know, officially, but just like all of the security stuff, a lot of the changes, social norms that came along with technological advances, and then of course like the sorts of media distribution, the kind of propaganda, the the way things captivated people's attention outside of war, and you had asymmetric stuff going on. I mean, it was ugly. I mean, there was
It wasn't a great period. That's true. We went through a lot. We had a couple of wars going on. It was hell. But there was just this sign, however tiny it might have been, of something changing for the positive. I'm not saying it necessarily did change for the positive, but it certainly didn't go into as negative a territory as we have been going recently. And I think that's why I look back on that with fondness, because, well, it just, you know, it could have been worse. And now, honestly, I'm not sure how it can be worse. I'm really not sure how it can be worse. Other than, fighting in the streets and things like that, things we all want to avoid. But at some point, it becomes unavoidable when things get so bad. And, that's the scenario that I think many of us are picturing. Just because there's so much that has gone wrong. Do you remember, Kyle, do you remember CBS?
The television network?
Used to be a television network that basically did its own thing. It wasn't, run at the behest of any government or corporation or massive corporation such as Paramount Plus.
It was kind of a staid organization, kind of boring almost. You know, they always had like the most beat up cameras.
That's what your grandfather would watch, you know?
They had
their NFL games on Sunday.
They did have CBS Sports.
They had 60 Minutes.
Lively. That was not quite as lively, but there's people that are fans of the photography.
60 Minutes, a good sit down show.
Uh-huh.
CBS had this sort of aura about it. I was making sure you remember them.
No, I know that kind of quiet, steady hand in network television.
It's, perhaps you heard the name Walter Cronkite, you know, and that's the way it was this day, and you know, every day it was. I think he'd give the date every day. Did he do that? Which is more than a lot of anchor people can do now. But he would do that. He was this fatherly figure, or even grandfatherly figure, that would just come into your living room every night, and it was something that was kind of comforting. So the CBS Evening News, a daily news show that was on every night, 7 p.m. here in New York, 6:30 in other parts of the country, eventually 6:30 here as well. But then he left, he died, he was replaced by somebody you may have heard of named Dan Rather. Do you remember Dan Rather? Have you heard of Dan Rather?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he was a war correspondent or something.
He was a correspondent, he wound up being ashamed because he said something about George W. Bush that wasn't true. All the things he said that were true, though, that apparently didn't count. But he was the anchor for the CBS Evening News for a while. And for a period of time, Dan Rather, as kind of an experiment, I guess, didn't last too long, at the end of every newscast, do you know what he would do? He would say just one word, courage. He would just say courage at the end of every newscast. It was a little weird, and it kind of reminded you of the Cowardly Lion, but it was his thing. And I guess it was to sort of inspire us to be brave, to be bold. You know, it was, I can appreciate people doing something different, trying something new. So that was his thing, Dan Rather. Close the evening news by saying the word courage. Well, I put forth that word does not apply today. And that if Dan Rather were among us today, he is? Is he? I never would have guessed. Really? Okay. Well, Dan Rather is doing something. I'm not sure what. But if he were doing the news, I would put forth.
I think he's disassociating.
Okay, you know, I don't blame
from the CBS
of
today.
Well, who isn't? All right, so he saying goodnight would instead say cowardice. That's the word. Cowardice. It's similar to courage, isn't it? Yeah, extra syllable. But think about it. Think about all the cowardice that's around us. Think of all the cowardice that we have seen in the last few years. Cowardice of the government, of the senators, of the representatives, of the cabinet, all these people that dare not say anything to refute what the leader is saying. Think of the cowardice of the courts that basically hand over decision after decision that will please the leader, that will change what this country stands for, that will abuse the Constitution in ways that we cannot even describe on these airwaves. Think of the cowardice of the media, whose job it is to cover this, to challenge this, to be a thorn in the side of the leadership, and they have failed over and over and over again. And finally, think of the cowardice of all of us who just go about our daily business and act like everything is normal. And to make it even worse, we continue to vote for these people and put them back in power after watching how they abuse our system, how they don't care about democracy, and how it means absolutely nothing to them. How many times does it have to be proven? And yet, we're just going to keep going as if nothing's wrong. Cowardice. It's the only thing that keeps us going right now. Because if you show courage, you're going to be a problem. You're going to be a big problem. Look, we had the former FBI director take a picture of seashells. And that pissed off the current regime so much that they went after him twice in the courts. Everybody knows it's never going to work, but they're trying to destroy his life. You can't destroy somebody's life just by going after them in court, even if you don't have a case. You know, it's a tactic. It's a tactic that prosecutors use. And that's what they're doing. And that's what they will do to their perceived enemies. And that is a message to the rest of us. Don't do that, or this will happen to you. And you might not have the support network that James Comey has, and your life really could be ruined. So best that you just keep everything in check. Don't complain. Don't be a thorn on the side. Look, this tactic, it goes on all over the world. It goes on in Russia, goes on in China, goes on in third world countries everywhere, goes on in the West as well. I just thought we were a little better than that. I just thought that when push came to shove, just like on TV, you know, the hero would stand up and say, not on my watch, you know, and just basically stand up for everything that we were force-fed as we were growing up, as far as to what this nation stands for, what we believe in, and how we're different. And I realize now we're no different. We're just like everyone else. We're just as weak and vulnerable as everybody. Maybe there's a certain freedom in knowing that, in realizing that we're no better, we have the same vulnerabilities, the same hypocrisies. Maybe that's something to work with then, where we can perhaps come up with a plan as to how we're going to fix this, if we're going to fix this, if we're going to care at all. And for that to work, we need another word. We need a better word than cowardice, obviously, because there's a lot of that around, way too much of it. And we've seen what it can do. So how about we try something else? You know, this last week with the Supreme Court ruling about the gerrymandering, basically, it's crazy because they're saying that in the interest of equality, we should not look at somebody's race when deciding what district to put them in. If that were the case, do you think Republicans would be tripping over themselves to fix those districts so that people of certain colors, and backgrounds would not be represented in the same way as those people who do not share those attributes. No, it would not be working that way. They would be basically seeing how the election went, seeing if they could get more people on their side rather than let's basically divide everybody who votes in a different direction so that when they do show up, they get just enough to feel like maybe they were heard, but it's never going to be above a certain amount. It's never going to be above 40%. So you're always going to be voting, but in the wrong place. So that while you may make up 80% of the population, and this is not untrue, you will only get 40% of the votes, of the representation, meaning you won't get anything. And that, in the eyes of the current Supreme Court, is fair. Now, of course, if it's being done for racial reasons, well, that's wrong. You just have to prove it. How many of you have lived with bullies growing up? Because I did. It's extremely hard to prove that you're being bullied when you're talking to an adult. Because guess what? The bully's not going to say that he's bullying you. No, they're going to lie. They're going to have friends. They're going to have bully parents. And on top of everything else, you're going to be trouble if you even bring it to anybody's attention. It's next to impossible. You need some kind of a smoking gun. You need to be eavesdropping as they discuss their dastardly plans. You need to catch them at that. That's the only way now. And that's where we are. That's where our country is right now. You know, I'm an optimist, and I think that the way the Supreme Court is right now, it's obviously horrible. But if you look at a 6-3 vote, which sounds really terrible, it is really terrible. It's 2-1. But one justice disappears, is replaced by another with a different philosophy, and that 6-3 vote is now 5-4. That happens one more time, guess what? They no longer have the power. Two people is all it takes. And that is not inconceivable in the years ahead. So I think instead of wringing our hands and bemoaning our fates, we need to strategize. We need to think, how do we defeat these bastards? Because we know what they're going to do. They've made it very clear. They're not going to challenge anything. They're cowards. We don't have to play that game. Let's play something a bit more strategic. And above all, we show up. And no matter how little it counts, we vote with every fiber of our being. It never doesn't count at all. So
that's true. Like all those, I think of all those close races I've seen over the years. I mean, they may be small, local or other positions, but you look at some of them and they're very close. They're miracles mm-hmm. that the votes went one way or the other. You know, it's essentially a toss up in certain areas for. It happens every now and then. You're amazed. So it's absolutely true. You shouldn't, I guess, turn a blind eye or throw up your hands entirely at the system, at least your role in the system as a citizen. That's what I firmly think. And even as they are attempting to make it a lot harder, I think that it's only emblematic of the duty you have to participate in that and the vigilance that we need to have for how that is how it's implemented. And I mean, we have to fight for the kind of norms that there have been, but I absolutely think you're spot on with having plans and, like, you know, what is the strategy? So I think having a strategy for the judiciary in the event of, thinking through appointments and stuff that might happen in various scenarios in the future, and also having a plan for the redistricting, the situation also with, what was it, the voter turnout, yeah, the mail-in balloting, I mean, the ability to mm-hmm. actually vote, that's something that I'm pretty keenly aware of and sensitive to. I know that my state and several other states are actively, you know, planning for that likelihood. And also something, this is what I was thinking of, constitutional amendments, something that you've brought up a lot of times. I think having a real idea of, like, what has worked and what hasn't, and there's been a lot more discussion of that lately. And I think really taking a long, hard look at, you know, what got us to this situation with the courts, what got us to the situation of a completely stagnant Congress. I mean, relatively stagnant.
Oh, they're stagnant.
They don't really do very much, and their productivity is exceedingly disappointing. So I think it's the combination of all of that needs to be something that we're talking about instead of sort of superfluous, frivolous, kind of that whole thing that we are now realizing was so toxic, which was, I guess, what did we call them, hot button issues or stuff that, you know, is just meant to elicit a reaction, rage baiting and stuff, you know, all that social media churn and slop. That's not what we should be focusing on. I mean, it's out there. It's a part of the landscape. As I've talked about, the operating conditions are less than ideal and have been for quite some time. Some of us have recognized it now as patterns. If you've been engaged with a lot of what's going on in the world, our place in the world, you've seen it, and I, you know, respect a lot of older people than, you know, from, you know, one or two generations ahead of me that had some pretty cynical views about things that I heard when I was coming into politics, and now I kind of look at it and I'm like, wow, you know, some of that was not exactly off, but I still believe that we need as many people out there voting, encouraging others to vote, and, you know, protecting at least the part of this system that we interface with as a populace. Citizens United, you know, campaign finance stuff, like, that's all got to go under the microscope, got to go entirely. I don't know what to do about some of it.
But, you know, when we're dealing with situations like this where the rules are just being cast aside so flagrantly, it's not the time to be high and mighty and say, well, we're not going to do it that way, because right now the rules don't really mean anything anymore. They've completely changed them. And if everybody doesn't play by the same rules, well, the people who don't play by these new rules will lose a lot, maybe permanently. So it's vital that everybody have the same playing field. We may not like it, and we may be able to get to a point where we can change it back to something a little bit more sane. But for now, the worst thing that we can do is just pretend that everything is okay, let them play with their new advantageous rules while the rest of us play by the way it should be. Because, yes, we will lose. We will lose by quite a bit. They are stacking the field. This is a tactic. This is a strategy. They're trying to make it so that people like you, Kyle, your entire state, which votes by mail, your entire state votes by mail. It works great. But they want to make that so that you can't do that anymore. I don't know what the plan is to have the entire state not count. But there are all kinds of similar things like that. You might say, well, voter ID makes sense. I mean, you should know who's voting. The thing is, you do know who's voting. It may not be the same system that they are talking about. And the reason for that is because the system they are talking about, it's very misleading. It's not just, yeah, show us your ID. No, it's get this particular type of ID. You think getting on an airplane was hard? No, this is a lot harder. You're going to have to cough up a birth certificate or some kind of ID that you don't have ready access to. And guess what? If you don't have that, you don't vote. It doesn't count. So think of all the people that aren't able to readily do that, and there are an awful lot of people that aren't readily able to do that. All of them will basically not have their vote counted if they're able to vote at all. It's very different than just showing ID and saying, yes, that's who you are. Look, when I vote, my signature has to match. I don't see my signature. I sign something, and then everyone looks, hey, does it match? Yes, it does. Okay, that's enough. Because somebody else has to come and do the same thing, and then if that were to happen, there'd be a whole big investigation and all kinds of prosecutions and things like that. It just doesn't happen. If it happened a whole hell of a lot, then, yeah, I could see maybe devoting a little bit more time to this. But the only reason we're talking about it now is because the other side didn't win something they wanted to win. And that's because it wasn't popular. That's because people voted against them. They can't seem to accept that when people vote against them. The only reason people vote against them is if they cheat. And this is from the playbook of every dictator, every fascist, everybody who wants to hold on to power at all costs. And that's basically why you see this conversation happening right now. We're talking about voter fraud when there is no voter fraud. None to speak of. You know, maybe a handful at most. Nothing to sway any election. Every single topic that is brought up to make you panic. Oh my God, illegal aliens are voting. No, they're not. That's not happening. First of all, do you think somebody who's undocumented is going to risk everything by saying, you know what? I want to vote for somebody. No, it doesn't make any sense. And they wouldn't be able to get away with it even if they tried. It doesn't happen. But by saying it over and over again, putting it on Fox News, it basically, you just have to keep repeating a lie over and over again. Who said that? It's a fact. You repeat a lie over and over again, it becomes the truth. You know? Keep saying the Mets have a chance this year. Keep saying it over and over again. Eventually some poor kid's going to believe it. You know? It doesn't make it real.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing of I guess, implicating all of this sorts of stuff has been enhanced, I think, largely. I mean, as a result of a lot of the changes they made quickly in the beginnings of this year or two, whatever it's been, I know that they basically, I think a lot of the agencies and organizations that were responsible for certifying that the elections had been above board and clean, a lot of that stuff has been gutted or defunded or entirely removed from the bureaucracy, such that they can say that kind of stuff and they're not contradicted in any way by an organization that actually has for real oversight over that kind of stuff, you know, overseeing the security and the handling of things, especially for federal elections. They resent all of that. They want their narrative, their talking points out there, and then us to be busy blowing air, you know, hot air about how what they're saying isn't true. And it's honestly a waste of our time. We should be talking about our strategies and stuff like that. And it just is a part of the kind of subterfuge and misdirection that they're employing.
Yeah, you say we should be talking about other things. We should be. There is so much time that has been wasted. We basically have to reinvent the wheel all over again. You've got Lee Zeldin in charge of the EPA turning back all these environmental regulations, making our air more dangerous, making our water more polluted, killing us, literally killing us. People are dying of cancer because of chemicals that are washing up in all kinds of places they're not supposed to be. And an organization like the EPA is supposed to be there to protect us, to get the right regulations. But idiots like Zeldin say, oh no, any regulation is bad. It's bad for industry, and that's more important than human beings. And you wonder why so many people are taking matters into their own hands. You know? Look, when it happens to Putin, and right now apparently there's some kind of worry about Putin getting got. Well, why do you think that's happening? Because he's a horrible person. He does horrible things. And a lot of people die on his watch. When the same thing starts happening in this country, don't be surprised when the same reaction happens. Don't be dismayed by that, because it's very predictable. If you keep doing this to people, eventually they will explode. You know, it's really a horrible thing to have to even fathom. But, I mean, it's also idiotic that you think you can abuse people for this long, steal their money, take their lives, basically give them dead ends to go down, and expect everybody to just come back for more. Maybe some people will, but a lot of people won't. So,
well,
yeah.
On top of that, let us watch your conspicuous consumption through celebrity and media, and basically flaunting your spoils.
Mm-hmm.
That breeds resentment.
Absolutely,
it's a,
yes.
It's a, I think, a core sort of elemental response that people have. And
sometimes it gets expressed at the wrong people, you know, the people that are just, you know, also being manipulated. And that's, you know, it's not the right response. It's not, but it's the inevitable response. And that's something that I wish we could see.
Yeah, I mean, it's the illusion of social mobility,
mm-hmm.
that you're basically admitting that it's entirely an illusion, and that this is really about a very select few, and everyone else is left to fend for themselves. There is no support, nothing, and you live by cutthroat attitudes. I agree, you know, you ought not be surprised when you're treated the way you treat others.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it, because look at how Trump has treated other leaders. Now, you know, I'm not going to judge the leaders and say, is that a good leader, is that a bad leader? Basically, he says, I'm going to kill this leader. Okay, all right, you know, it might be a horrible person, but when you go out and say things like that, you can't be all high and mighty when someone says, hey, you know what? We want to kill you. It's like, oh, my God, how could you do that? How could you say that? What a horrible thing to say. But you've already killed leaders of other countries and expect to just get away with it. You've already killed unknown number of civilians who are completely innocent, and you expect to pass for that as well. No, the world doesn't work that way. Eventually, debts come to be paid. And, you know, I wish people would see this early on rather than thinking they're invincible and that they can just keep behaving this way. It's really, really bad, not just for them, but for our entire nation and certainly for the world, because it just makes the whole place a lot more uncivilized. And the actions of the United States and Israel have really done a number on the progress of civilization on this planet. And I don't know how we get out of it. I really don't. There has to be reckoning. There has to be prices paid for all of the things that have happened that didn't have to happen, that certainly did not have to happen.
A lot of reconciliation.
Yeah. okay, but going back to domestically, this is a fun story. Officials at the Food and Drug Administration have blocked publication of several studies supporting the safety of widely used vaccines against COVID-19 and shingles in recent months. So the FDA is blocking publication of studies that say that certain vaccines are safe. How does the FDA justify this? I mean, it defies logic. It just makes no sense at all, but that is the reality that we're dealing with. It's nuts. So, okay, I feel like I have to say something that makes a little bit of sense here. And let's go to Todd Blanche, the acting attorney general, who on Sunday...
No, you can skip that.
Oh, but it's important. It's important. It's important that people know this, because I think a lot of our listeners might be a little concerned, because we were talking about this last week when we were 86ing everybody. Basically, he sought to contrast... The recent indictment by the Justice Department of former FBI Director James Comey. And just think about that for a second. The Justice Department indicting the former FBI Director. What world is that? basically indicting him because he took a picture of some seashells that spelled out 8647. When asked on NBC's Meet the Press whether others who displayed the same numbers or bought or sold T-shirts with the same message would face the same prosecution, here's what he said. The 8647 message is posted constantly. That phrase is used constantly. I'm glad he gets that. Every one of those statements do not result in indictments. What makes Comey's case different, he argued, is other evidence collected, which he said he could not describe. So this indescribable evidence that they have against him is not part of the indictment. You'd think if you're going after the guy, you have to describe it at some point. You know, and an indictment is a damn good place to do that. He says, of course, the seashells are part of that case. You prove intent with witnesses. You prove intent with documents. He added there was a body of evidence that led to Comey's indictment. But the three-page indictment, which has been seen, focused only on the seashells. So, yeah, this is... It started off a little bit sane, but it's gone completely crazy. 8647. I guess I shouldn't say that out loud. Who knows? Then I've been following the case with the ballroom. You know, the whole craziness of the ballroom, tearing down part of the White House and starting to build this monstrosity that they claim they need. Well, the thing that really...
He's building his bunker.
Yeah.
You realize that, don't you? This is his compound.
Can he just build his mausoleum and get it over with?
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, that's what the arch is going to be.
Yeah, you can just hang out there as long as you want, then forever.
Floating at the very top in a vacuum.
Well, okay, so remember when this all came out? Well, first of all, hey, they're tearing down part of the White House. There was that. Then they finished without getting permission from anybody. And then we had the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And apparently, you know, we don't subscribe to conspiracy theories. We don't. We doubt everything we hear. But when you hear things like this, it makes you wonder how much people in charge were wishing for something exactly like that to happen. Okay, listen to this. Situation regarding the funding of the new White House ballroom, which officially is the East Wing Modernization Project, became significantly more complex recently. Basically, there was a massive taxpayer-funded security request, which was made over the past few days. So, okay, the original private donations, that's how the thing was going to be paid for.
How it's being paid for.
$200 and $400 million was what it was going to cost to build the ballroom. And private donation and his own funds, Trump's own funds, were going to pay for this. And by doing that, they were going to bypass the congressional budget fights and basically do, a legacy project. Well, now there's a $1 billion security bill. Yeah. The narrative has changed significantly. Senate Republicans introduced a proposal to allocate $1 billion in federal taxpayer money toward the project. Why? Well, the justification was lawmakers are citing a recent security breach at the White House Correspondents' Dinner as evidence that high-profile events need to be moved inside a hardened venue. So, nobody thought of this before. Nobody thought that maybe there'd be a security breach and they would need something that was a bit more secure. No, they had to let that play out so that they could show people and say, yeah, look, that shouldn't happen. That shouldn't be. If we had a ballroom, that wouldn't have happened. And I've heard so many idiots saying exactly that. It's like they're reading from a script. Look, everybody knew hotels can be breached in one way or another. That's why you have security. And you did have security. And you stopped the breach. So, you know, while it was scary, it did work. And something else to remember, this is not a White House event. It's a press event. The White House doesn't go to the hotel and have events. Not that I know of. They have events at other official government places. So, you know, everything is normal. Everything is acting the way it should. But now, they're saying, no, the only way we can do this is if $1 billion of taxpayer money now goes to funding this, to funding this ridiculous ballroom. It was always in the plan for taxpayers to pay for this. I don't know what kind of fool you would have to be to believe otherwise. We all saw it coming. We didn't know how it was going to come, but I'll bet that the people behind it were thrilled when they saw that guy running through security. That's our ticket, they said.
Yo, E, we're all going to pay for all of this. Him and his whole family is going to weigh anchor and just sail off, best case scenario, and we're going to be left with all of it. The cost to society, the cost economically, like, this is just, I mean, it's not at all about us, and none of this is about the business of the people actually being put forth, and I think, again, this breeds resentment.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
People are not for this. They don't want to pay for this, and it's just being, like, forced upon the populace.
Well, it's
and you're essentially you're robbing from the American people, and it's our hard work. Why don't they build a data center there too?
Well, the thing is, yes, they are robbing from the American people, but they're doing it in such an obvious way that, you know, I'm almost just baffled by how they really think they can get away with this, and maybe they will get away with it because we're that naive that we actually think they have our best interests at heart. And we all know they don't. They don't care about the economy. They don't care about world peace. They don't care about anything that affects people, everyday people, healthcare, education, pollution, none of that. They care about their bottom line, about not spending anything themselves, but having everything taken care of for them. And that's what they're getting. That's exactly what they're getting. So, yeah. Like I said, I don't want to talk about any of this.
What, how these people and people like them are not safe anywhere in the world?
Well, there's that. Okay, you know, that's some comfort. But no, not talk about how everything is being destroyed because we're letting it happen. Because we're letting it happen at every avenue, and we need united fronts to stand up and stop it. Because it works in other countries. It really does. Other countries have brought down worse regimes than this, and we need to have a united front. And
people are disgusted, E. And, I mean, there are probably people stocking up on road flares and, you know,
fine, but
doing
are they empowered? Are they empowered to know they can affect change? Because without that, there's not much motivation. You know, yeah, it's great to all show up for No King's Day for a couple of hours, you know, on a Saturday, and then go home and do it again in 6 months. But how about something a bit more sustained where, you know, we occupy, we surround, and we basically make these people's lives uncomfortable as hell until they change. How about that? Are we not capable of this? Because they do this all over the world, and it works. It works great. It's not comfortable. It's not polite. But it does bring a lot of people together, and it makes you realize, you know, who your friends are.
Yes. It's pest control.
Well, I'm glad we have this voice here, this opportunity to speak our minds. And I hope that people support WUSB because, you know, like any non-commercial radio station worth its salt, we value free speech. We value the ability to speak our minds and say different things, hear different things, deal with debate and argument. I think that's something we all could use at the highest levels and at the lowest levels.
Absolutely, yeah. People got to, like, stay observing and vigilant and make the critiques, you know? If the stuff's not working for you, talk about it. Share your stories. Share other people's stories. Help people tell their own stories. And put that, like, channel that disgust, I think, into how to better operate the system we have. I don't personally buy into, like, just tearing it all down or turning your back on it. I think it's just employ that huge, wide multitude of tools and tactics mm-hmm. to seize it as a populace from a multitude of viewpoints. Like, people have to have a collective belief in something so they can put aside their differences for the moment to get back to that regular order and a politics of progress and action instead of what we've been witnessing and served with by these bureaucrats.
The most powerful protest is peaceful protest. It over the years, it has proven to be something that the opposition simply is not equipped to handle. It doesn't mean, though, that violence is not used in response and witness Minneapolis as a result. Peaceful protesters killed in cold blood, and the people who did it still walking the streets, and our government celebrating. It's disgusting, and lying about the people that they killed. So, you know, the price is high, obviously, but it is the way to actually get people to realize what it is they're dealing with, and to also realize the strength they have in numbers. It's just something we don't do enough. It's something we don't really celebrate enough. And, boy, if there ever was a time for it, the time is now, you know? It's time to start talking to your friends, your neighbors, and ask yourself, what is the plan? What are we going to do? How are we going to fix this? Because we're the only ones that can fix it right now. We know that big tech isn't going to fix it. We know that the media is not going to fix it. We certainly know that the government isn't going to fix it. It's up to us, individual people. But we have to believe we have the power. If we don't think we have any power, then we can't do anything. We might as well just go back and watch TV.
Well, I think I'm hearing in what you're saying, get in the way. Like, it is about taking up space collectively. Like, that's the thing of strength and numbers. We were watching some video of people running from the cops. They're actually on, like, motorized bikes. And we had this long conversation about, like, well, they're on public roads.
You didn't approve of
that. Well, okay. Hold on. I love the spirit just like you do. And I think, you know, it's a rite of passage running from the cops, I guess, at certain ages. But they weren't wearing helmets. I would prefer to see them all wearing a helmet of some kind.
This was in Oakland, California, this was happening. But I've also seen it happen in Port Jefferson.
Exactly. They've got a lot of different types.
They're a lot younger, but still I see it happening.
There's a lot of types of motorized vehicles now, and some are electric, some are small engines, some are actually like motorcycle and off-road vehicles.
And they're dangerous, so be careful if you're riding one.
Some of them, like, I specifically think off-road vehicles don't really have turn signals and stuff made for traffic, brake lights, that kind of stuff. I may be wrong. Those are my only points of disagreement. I mean, even like doing tricks and wheelies, that could put yourself at serious risk. And if, you know, your frontal cortex isn't fully developed, you might do too many tricks. But that's another thing.
The points that were coming up, though, you know, these are off-road bikes. Okay, so they're not supposed to be on the road. So then where do you ride them? Off-road? Well, they won't let you ride on paths because there's no place for them to go. So you have to ask yourself, why are they doing this? Because they have nothing else. So maybe have a way for them to you know, express themselves and enjoy what they do.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting and I think clever and I think inspirational use of our ready accessibility to consumer items like mm-hmm. dirt bikes or whatever, electric bikes. And look at what you can do as far as getting in the way.
Right.
Were that to be organized or a part of other things? Like, we saw a lot of that in L.A. emerge just ad hoc. People were riding around covering the events, getting places. Mobility was a factor in covering
and
protests.
And this happens all over the world.
Yeah, and in Europe all the time, you see people on all kinds, you know, cars, you know, waving flags and all that, or disrupting traffic and stuff like that.
Look, if you're violent, if you're hurting people, obviously that is wrong. That is something we do not support. But just being out there, you know, expressing yourself, having fun, just be careful doing it. But there's no reason to criminalize people like that.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, my greater point. That's what I wanted to get to, is that being in a big pack, like big bike rides that we had over the weekend and all kinds of stuff that happens in the springtime when you're outside, we should celebrate it to a degree. There's going to be a lot of parades, a lot of street fairs, a lot of festivals, you know. Let's protect those areas. Like, we're going to have road closures and stuff. But also, people should be able to get out and have that carefree spirit. And I guess, you know, being a bit of a nuisance, because there is, like you said, way too much just sort of politeness, kind of like try not to disrupt anything and be small and not get noticed and stuff. And I think those are actually incredibly powerful moments for ideas and tools and tactics and even ridicule and humor to just sort of surface and appear. And so I think with all the danger inherent in what we talked about, there are so many ways to be incredibly smart about it and clever and intelligent and make your message really amplified.
When the biggest crime they're accused of is, you know, slowing down traffic. Oh, boo-hoo. Okay, so traffic goes a little slower. Then they went up the Bay Bridge, and then the cops blocked them, so they turned around, and now they're going the wrong way on the Bay Bridge. Wow, well, what do you think that is? It's just ridiculous. And you see all these cops running across. I don't know why the cops were running. Don't you have motorcycles, too? I don't know why they couldn't chase them a different way. It's just funny. Anyway, listen, we're out of time. Please support WUSB, WUSB.fm. You'll find all the information there. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Didn't want to talk about any of this, but it was fun talking about it with you, Kyle, and thank you, listeners, for humoring us.
Yes, next time we'll talk about people riding in large packs of robotic horses. But until that time, thanks for listening.
We could carry our portable unit and just do that and record it and play it on the air.
I'm up for it.
People like our remote shows, so, you know, more ideas, otw@2600.com. Stay tuned to WUSB for more incredible programming.
Be playful.
Absolutely.
Have fun.
And remember your value.
need a friend.